Tonight on The Down Low, from the comedy group Broken Lizard, Jay Chandrasekhar, Albany Park Theater Project's David Viner, and the queen of heavy metal, Lita Ford. Now here's your host, a man who also considers himself the queen of heavy metal, Justin Coffin.
I never said that. I would never take that away from Lita. Prince, maybe. Joker, 9. All right. Welcome to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thank you for being with us tonight on this wintry night in Chicagoland. We'll try to keep you warm with an outstanding show. Tough luck loss for the Wildcats as they lost again to another Big Ten team, the Michigan Wolverines. This one hurts. For a minute there, I thought they had it, but they couldn't pull it out. Rutgers coming up next. Hopefully they get that win. And then, you know, got to pretty much win the Big Ten tournament to be considered for anything at this point. Well, we got some serious star power on the show tonight. Later this hour, rocker Lita Ford. Woo! How about that? I went to a party last Saturday night. I was so excited. We'll talk about her new memoir, Living Like a Runaway. Amazing stuff about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. In the book, she dishes on relationships with Eddie Van Halen, as she calls Edward. Edward Van Halen. John Bon Jovi, Nikki Sixx, talks about how much she didn't like the band Poison. Hey, that automatically makes her number one in our hearts, right? But it's more about her being a woman in a male-dominated field. We'll talk about her career. She's signing books tomorrow at North Central College in Naperville. I can't wait to talk to one of the stars of The Runaways, Lita Ford, coming up right after the news here in the 8 o'clock hour. Also, tomorrow night, the Park West will host Broken Lizard, the famed comedy group. They're currently touring and making Super Troopers 2. Jay Chandrasekhar will be my guest tonight. He's joining me after 9 o'clock to talk about the new movie and about the huge cult following they've created over the years and how they're pretty much crowdfunding Super Troopers 2. They said, forget Hollywood. We'll do this one on our own. So we'll talk with Jay coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. And last week, the MacArthur Arts Grants were given out to Chicago companies. Albany Park Theater Company was a recipient, and we'll talk with David Finer about the work they're currently rehearsing, Learning Curve. It's a collaboration with Third Rail Projects out of New York. It's an immersive theater project that makes you feel like you're in a Chicago public school classroom. Can't wait to talk about this project. Coming up at 2 will be in the 9 o'clock hour. And it's Wednesday, so this is when we do some bits. The Character Flaws is our segment where we feature some sketch and improv, best that Chicago has to offer tonight. Great performances by some of Chicago's best, including Susan Messing, Rachel Mason, Matt Ulrich, Rob Grabowski from Kiss Kiss Cabaret in Uptown, and many, many more. That's coming up later in the show, so stick with us tonight. We're here till 11, news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martyr, of course, and Esmeralda Leon, and production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download. All right. Why don't we kick it off here and do the carryout? This is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Senator Mitch McConnell, America's most beloved senator, said that the Senate would block any Supreme Court nominee this president puts forward. So what does Obama do? Sources say that one candidate being vetted is Governor Sandoval out of Nevada. A Republican? Oh, your move, Senator. This is like a game of street chess where President Obama's a trash-talking youngster with a skateboard, and Mitch McConnell is the old-timer who swats flies with a newspaper and complains that the TV is too loud. Hey, they may hate each other in chess, but they love each other in life. No, they don't. They don't. That's not going to happen. Bernie Sanders is coming to Chicago tomorrow. He's got two appearances, one at Chicago State University, which announced today that they will have to close school early because of funding issues with the state, which reminds me of the classic rock song, School's Out Because of Bruce Rauner. When asked for comment and why he chose to get involved in a matter that is playing out in Springfield, not Washington, Senator Sanders said, hello, hello, who's on the phone? Who is this? How do you work these buttons? Beep, boop, beep, hello.
Hillary Clinton went on the Steve Harvey show and told people she likes thin crust pizza over deep dish. I'd just like to know how that question was vetted. Nope, you know what? She will not talk about emails, but she will talk about pizza. Ask her about pizza. No Benghazi, pizza. A record number of Americans drove a record amount of miles in 2015, so driving is back, when Reach for Common bicyclist said, on the left! Facebook released new reaction buttons today. They're essentially emojis you could choose over the ineffectual like button. Buttons range from smiley face to angry face to sad face. No word if there's a, I haven't talked to you since high school, but hopefully you will notice that I like 25 of your latest posts face. Be a weird looking face. It's Oscar week, and that means what exactly? We get to watch E! To see what jewelry Jennifer Lawrence is thinking about wearing? I hope the red carpet fair is strong this year. I want to see some trips, some accidental swears, maybe a couple ill-timed cutaways, and I hope it rains, because I just love it when it rains on Hollywood. They get so miserable. Why? Why did you rain on our day of self-congratulation? Oh, I paid no money for this hair, makeup, dress, and jewelry, and shoes. Oh, and the movies, too, right. I want Spotlight to win, just for the mustaches. In weather, what a beautiful day. Gentle breeze, so nice. Weather once again wreaks havoc on my home internet. Thousands without power as high winds and snow pound the Chicago area. Flights canceled and delayed. Rush hour commutes snarled. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. It makes us long for the days of last week. But really, come on, Chicago. I mean, who are we? Are we San Bernardino Valley? Is that a thing? Are we La Jolla? We can't handle 2 inches of snow? God, stop the complaining. Jeez. In sports, the Hawks take on the Nashville Predators tomorrow. Ugh, the Predators. I wonder if Randy Travis is going to drop the puck. Yeah, let's play some hockey. Then he's going to get 15 DUIs after the game. Lots going on at the NFL Combine. The Bears coaching staff got on record saying they're good with their current left tackle. Okay. And they didn't offer Matt Forte less money. They just let him go. Also, Coach John Fox went on record talking about the running backs they do have, including Kadeem Carey. He said, I think he's a guy after contact who's pretty special. And a lot of times it's hard to measure what's behind the left nipple and between your ears. Wait, what? That's what he said. Behind that left nipple. Wow. Then he went on to talk about his offensive line. We have a great offensive line. We really like what we have at left nipple. I mean, left tackle. I like this coach. The Northwestern Wildcats continued their shame spiral with another Big Ten road loss to the Michigan Wolverines. This makes them 17-11 overall. That's not even bubble. That's like smooth water right down the drain. And finally tonight, Kesha, who was supposed to play at Loyola on Friday, canceled. She cited personal reasons. So no Kesha in Chicago. Darn it. What am I going to do with all this glitter I bought? Well, that's the carry out for February 24th, 2016. Hey, it's a cruddy night, so try the soup. I'm going to be honest. We made it on the first. But February is the shortest month. More to come tonight. Jay Chandrasekhar will be here from Broken Lizard. Lita Ford. David Finer. And Character Flaws. That's right. We got a jam-packed show coming up. It's a download till 11 o'clock here on WGN. So, yeah, we'll... Coming up after the news, Lita Ford will join us. The book is called Living Like a Runaway. She wrote a memoir. Pete Zimmerman, welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Hey.
I see you all day. I feel like that's so disingenuous to be like, hey, Pete Zimmerman, good to see you, buddy.
Well, we have our separate. We spend some
time apart.
Yeah, we do.
It's just after a while, it's too much. No, but Lita Ford, this is going to be fun, man.
So excited.
You know, I read the book. I read the full memoir, and you know, I kind of teased it out that there's a lot of sort of. You remember Lita Ford? You know, Lita Ford.
Yeah, of course.
Lita Ford was a guitar player. I mean, she was with the Runaways mm-hmm. with Joan Jett. Lita Ford was, I think, 16 years old when she started in that band. I mean, they were all underage, which mm-hmm. caused a host of problems. She talks about not only
you know, drugs and rock and roll and lifestyle, but obviously, if you can imagine being 16 years old, an all-girl band on the road, mm-hmm. you're running into some trouble with some underage sex and things like that, and that's a big part of this book. It's Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll is the best way to sum up this show. Or not
this show?
Not this show, but this book, because what we're going to talk about tonight. Because I kind of figured it out with the interview. That's what I wanted to talk about. The sex part is the stuff that probably people buy the book for, because she dishes on, like, she talks about her relationships. Like, she was in a long-time relationship with Nikki Sixx from Motley Crue.
Hmm.
And then she talks about, you know, flings, a lot of trysts. Eddie Van Halen, who is known as Edward Van Halen.
Hmm.
Eddie Van Halen is, it's like one of those things, like, if my name is Justin and everyone calls me Jace or Juss, and that's essentially what, you know, everyone knows that's not my name. That's kind of what it is with Eddie Van Halen. No one calls him Edward. They call him Edward.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the fans, that's like his name for fans. Isn't that interesting?
Dave Lee Roth.
Yeah, if you call him David, you're a poser. It's Edward. It's Edward Van Halen. Edward Van Halen. As mentioned, Nikki Sixx. Who else does she have? John Bon Jovi. Now, there's been some pushback because some of these guys are like, hey, don't mention my name. What's
yeah, why are you bringing this up, you know?
But that sells books. And, I mean, anyone who's doing a memoir on the heavy metal movement of the 80s, mm-hmm. has got to name names, right? I mean, you have to.
Yeah, when I get my little grubby hands on that thing, that's what I'm looking for.
Have you read the book The Dirt? Motley Crue book?
No, it's on my shelf, so but I haven't.
Now, I've heard in that as well. I didn't know this, but a friend told me that there's a lot of embellishment. And I was like, no, don't say that. Because I was like, this is the worst. And now I'm like, oh, maybe they were faking it. But, you know, a lot of Lita Ford stories, which she's in the dirt because she dated Nikki Sixx for a while.
Mm-hmm.
She sums up, like, there's a whole chapter, or not chapter, but a whole story about the apartment they lived in. These are all L.A. bands.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were a fan of heavy metal, like the 80s, you know, Poison or Motley Crue or Lita Ford or any of this stuff, they're all that was the scene, Los Angeles, Sunset Strip.
Like I can't tell you how much time I spent on the couch on watching MTV.
Yeah, MTV made bands. This stuff, right? But yeah, so there's a big scene in L.A. That's where Van Halen was at. That was, like I said, Poison, Rat.
Oh, yeah.
Round and round. What goes around? There's a scene where Rat's mad at Lita Ford. That's what I mean. It's the greatest book ever. If you're into that music, it's the greatest book ever. Oh, I want to get to the chapter where Rat's mad at Lita Ford.
Oh, man.
There's a lot with Joan Jett, because Joan Jett was her partner in crime in that, and they weren't very close. Joan Jett and Lita Ford, even though you would think, you know, just being in a band at such a young age, they would have a lifetime, you know, chemistry. They don't.
Were they like the Monkees in that they were kind of put together, they were just put together, manufactured together to be this band?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they were young. I mean, after that band, they broke up. They all went their separate ways. It wasn't very long. It didn't last very long, the Runaways. But they were kind of, and they were made famous, the movie that just either just came out, or the movie with Dakota Fanning.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah. That was the Runaways. That was all about that. But
Cherry Bomb.
Yeah. Which she talks about got a resurgence of that song because of the Guardians of the Galaxy. I guess it's on the soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. It's in the movie. Really good soundtrack.
But anyway, there's a lot to talk about. I'm not going to be able to get to everything, because I would love to sit down with Lita Ford for like 2.5 hours and just be like, here's what I remember. Ripped jeans, teased hair, Nikki Sixx, Ozzy Osbourne. She was managed for a long time by Sharon Osbourne. It's really interesting. I mean, it's such a everybody knows everybody in that community.
Yeah.
And about those L.A., you know, those L.A. famed parties and jam sessions and clubs. And she talks all about it, and it's at the height of the record companies.
I would like to see, has there been a movie? Maybe I'm just missing one, but, you know, or an HBO series instead of, like, the New York in the 70s? Right.
Well, isn't the movie, what's the movie that was a Broadway music, Rock of Ages?
Oh, yeah.
That I mean, it's the worst kind of movie you could make on this. I'd like to see, like, Vinyl, which is on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
About this scene, which is a little bit, it predates this, it's more 70s, Vinyl is. But like an 80s about that time. But they screwed it up with Rock of Ages. They made it real, you know, Disney.
Mm-hmm.
No one's breaking in the song. Nobody's breaking in the song. I don't want to, you know, but there was a lot of talk. Maybe I'll ask Lita, but there was a lot of talk about The Dirt, the Motley Crue book, becoming a movie. And I think that they got it in production at one point. It might still come out, but I think that there'd be a lot of people out there that want to know about that. Because it was on MTV, it all played out in front of us. It was the rock and roll. I mean, it was the last bastion of that, because after the 80s, and then 91, 92 came Nirvana and grunge, and heavy metal just gone.
Tanked.
I read it in her book, right at the end, there was only one charted single on the Billboard 100 in 1993, that was heavy metal. And to think about that from like 1988, when it was like Aerosmith and Def Leppard and Motley Crue.
So quickly?
Think about it, the top 40 songs were all heavy metal. Everyone was Winger. Yeah. Everyone wanted to be Winger, right?
Crocus, Dokken.
Right. You're going deep cuts.
Yeah.
The guys from Dokken do not get a good, they do not get a good, good. They're in the book as well. They fall under the category of the male chauvinist. One of the guitar players is a total jerk. Guys from Black Sabbath don't come off very well in this book. It's really interesting. Dio.
Ronnie James Dio
comes off great. He's like, yeah, he's a really nice guy. The guys from Judas Priest come off pretty great. Yeah, so it's interesting. Like, yeah, it's all from Lita Ford's perspective. But
yeah, I gotta get my hands on that book.
Yeah, you do. I've got it in my hands. I can actually hand it to you. You can have it.
Well, she's doing an appearance tomorrow in Naperville. Yep. Maybe I'll go out and
get her to sign it.
Yeah.
Anyway, see if she'll give you those ripped jeans. She's got a story in here where she got him off of a construction worker. A guy was wearing the ripped jeans that are in the Kiss Me Deadly video. Come on, pretty baby, kiss me deadly.
I love that song.
Those jeans, they saw a construction worker on. This is the story in the book. And they're like, jumped out, and they're like, how much for the jeans? And then she wore them in the video. I'm like, gross. That's so gross. That's not rock and roll to me, borrowing construction workers' ripped jeans. But they were style. Hey, tastemakers, man. We were the style. Rob Martire, you a big Lita Ford fan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, did you get that pizza? Did Jake bring that pizza back for you last night?
Well, here's the thing. You guys were at Pequod's last night right after the Blackhawks live broadcast. Mm-hmm. Your show sounded great. The problem being is that I was done at 12:15, so I'm out of here at like 12:16. Jake right. never got back until probably about 12:30, 12:35. The first thing he says to me is, hey, man, I brought you back some pizza. I said, hey, man, thanks.
Oh, you know who's going to hate hearing that? Josh Caterer from the Smoking Popes, because at the end of the night, one of the things he was interested in was pizza. But he was on stage with us the entire time. So when he was done, I'm like, well, thanks. He's like,
You should have given it to
him. Yeah, he had like his 15-year-old kid with him. And they're like, where can we get some pizza? Because like it closed up, and they looked at your pizza, Martire. And he goes, anyone got dibs on that? And I go, that's for Rob Martire.
You know, as we so often do in this business, I'm going to go ahead and throw one of the younger members of our company under the bus completely blame Jake.
Jake.
It's his fault.
Well, we'll make it up to you. We'll get you some fresh pizza.
Yeah, but it sounded like a lot of fun last night.
It was a lot of fun, and thanks to everybody out at Pequod's and everyone who came out to that broadcast. Great. So much fun for when I love this studio. I love performing, doing the show here on Michigan Avenue. It's really great. But doing it live at Pequod's, in a pizza parlor like that, with so many people coming in and being able to see the people listening and interact with them is really fun. So anyway, Lita Ford coming up after the news. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest tonight is the queen of heavy metal. Lita Ford is synonymous with shredding guitars and hair metal. Starting early in her life as a guitarist in The Runaways alongside Joan Jett, she became a solo artist and had commercial success in the 1980s, in part because of heavy rotation on MTV with songs like Kiss Me Deadly and Close My Eyes Forever, the duet with Ozzy Osbourne. Years later, Ford is still rocking. She just finished her memoir, Living Like a Runaway, which chronicles her life with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Lita Ford will be signing books tomorrow night at North Central College in Naperville. But first, she's my guest tonight on The Download. Lita Ford, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. And this book is great. It's a great read for anyone who's a fan of the music and the times. I mean, this is, I mean, it's a tell-all, as evidenced by all of the pre-press for it. But, you know, what I wanted to talk to you about was obviously your role as a woman in heavy metal. But let's start with The Runaways, because not only were you a woman, you know, blazing a trail in this music, but you were also a teenager. I mean, you're so young when The Runaways were starting. Talk about The Runaways and what that band meant for you as you started out.
It was the beginning of my career. I took it very seriously, and I wanted to give it all I had. I wanted to make it count. I wanted to make everything I did count. And it was difficult, you know. We had a lot of fun, though. We were rebellious teenage troublemakers, and that's what Kim Fowley, who put the band together, wanted us to be. You know, he wanted us to be hellraisers, and we loved it, of course. Being a teenager, what else? You know, what else do teenagers want to do? I mean, some of them are like that, I guess, but most of them are. Wanting to put their fingers in places that they've never dipped and dabbled in before.
Reading the book, one of the interesting things is you did take this seriously, and you did come to blows with the bands a lot of the times when people were being more teenager-like or dabbling into more of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll part of it. This was a band. This was your future.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wanted to make a career out of it. I wanted to make it my life. I didn't want to just do The Runaways and then call it a day. So when The Runaways broke up, I went off and did a solo career, became a solo artist. I had to teach myself how to sing. Being in The Runaways, I only sang backing vocals, so I didn't really know how to sing a lead vocal until I started taking vocal lessons and I started to teach myself how to front a band. That was a lot of work.
Let me ask you, at what point did you say, you know, after The Runaways and you started to work on your voice, at what point did you realize, you know what, I've got this? You talk a lot in the book about evolving as a musician. At what point do you realize that, you know, I'm going to have not only a career, but a successful career, a trailblazing career?
I think it's something that happens on a regular daily basis. You know, every show seems to be better than the last. Right now, I've got some of the best musicians in Hollywood in my band. I'm really blessed with my band. To be able to stand on a stage with these guys that are in my band now, you have to be good, or they won't have it, you know? And they're wonderful people, too, not just great musicians.
You know, you've had so many different musicians around you, and you talk about it in the book, but what I also loved about it was that you're always the leader. In the way that you're like, I brought this player in, I brought this drummer in. I mean, the way you talk about it in the memoir is about how you're trying to make sure you have great musicians around you.
Yeah, I created a lot of these guys, you know, and I don't think they would be where they are today if I kind of plucked them out of the gutter, so to speak, and made them into great musicians. Not the guys that are in my band now, because they were already established before we met. But a lot of different musicians that I've pulled out of the street. You know, Randy Castillo was one. Randy went on to play with Ozzy. He went on to play with Motley Crue. And before that, he was my drummer.
Right.
Eric Singer was my drummer before he was with, I think he was with Alice for a while, Cooper. I mean, the list goes on. And you know, I don't know that they will ever say that unless you actually bring it up and ask them.
Beyond the musicians, you had surrounded yourself with so many different producers and managers and A&R people, all the people around you creating Lita Ford. I really enjoyed the part of the book that focused on your parents, because your parents supported you from a very young age with The Runaways, and they were with you through your solo career, and they became your constant.
Yeah, they did. My parents were just they gave me so much support and confidence to go out and divide and conquer, you know. They were my fans. They were my friends. They were my parents. I was an only child. I didn't have a brother or sister. So it was really nice to be close with them. Mm-hmm. But when they passed away, I felt almost like I was left alone, you know, not having a brother or sister, which is why I had two boys, because I didn't want my sons to be alone in case anything happened.
And it's interesting, too, because it's Hollywood, you know, and you have all these producers and managers and bandmates that are made. I mean, the idea is that you're all family, but at the end of the day, you're not. I mean, at the end of the day, right. You know, there's so many different people that are going to do different things that you might not be able to trust, but your parents were there. And the other thing, too, is to watch their only child, their daughter, become, you know, the guitar player in The Runaways. I mean, it's not like they supported you through, hey, you're going to be a theater artist. I mean, you went into heavy metal, a chauvinistic, dominated male field, and they supported you all the way through. A lot of parents probably wouldn't do that.
They got to know a lot of these rock stars, too. You know, my mother loved Alice Cooper. My dad was friends with Tony Iommi. You know, they knew each other. There's one part in the book where I talk about my mother meets David Bowie,
yeah.
And she doesn't know who he is.
Right. Just sitting on the couch.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. It was just like a 10-minute, 20-minute, you know, sitting on the couch talking to David Bowie. They didn't have a fling or anything like
right,
that.
Right, right, right. There are plenty of flings in this book. You know, I mean, I think, you know, just reading any of the pre-press, the New York Post or anything like that, I mean, everyone likes to pull out the more salacious details of the book about flings with John Bon Jovi or Edward Van Halen, as you call him. But, you know, the interesting thing to me about this book was about the story you were telling about being a woman in a male-dominated field. Not only were you a female guitar player, but, I mean, you were the lead in your band. I mean, you were lead of four. The idea that, you know, you were shredding next to some of the best and dominating them on the stage. Yet sometimes in some situations, as you chronicled in one situation where a producer changed a record after you were done with it, you never got that respect because a lot of what was happening in metal, heavy metal at the time, was very male-dominated and chauvinistic.
It was, and they would find a reason to criticize. And had it have been a guy, that wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it just found ways to get around it, found ways to deal with it, and move on.
How did you deal with it? I mean, you were able to get past the trappings that we've all known about in rock and roll, with drugs and things like that. But how did you cope with the fact that you were up against it? I mean, this was just not only you didn't have the band, it was just Lita Ford. How did you cope with having to come up against all these guys that were just being so disrespectful to you?
Well, it wasn't like there was an army of them. I mean, you know, there was just certain situations where, like the guy that in the recording studio, I will forever hold it against him and forever rub it in his face, and I will put it in the book, and I will talk about it, and I will make him out to be the small little dirtbag that he is. And who does that?
Right.
That's disgusting. It's like, go do your friend's record if you want your friend
in
to
this
be
case,
on a record.
He added,
don't put him on mine.
Right, he added guitar part to your song after it was done and it was mastered. He went in,
yeah.
and you claim that, you know, that was if that was a guy, he would never have done that.
No, and they say things like, I wanted a different solo. Okay, well, why didn't you ask me, you know?
Right.
Don't just bring in your friend because you wanted him on the song. It's just wrong. So it happens. You live and learn. I will never leave the producer alone in the studio again unless I trust them 100%. And this guy was just not trustworthy.
Hmm. Another big part of this book, you can read the book for all the stuff about the different stories, you know, behind closed doors with different rock musicians. But one thing that I got as a through line through this was another taboo subject, and that's money. You know, when you were working with the Runaways, I mean, there were some thoughts where you're like, when are we going to get paid? And even when, you know, you were talking about some of the stuff you were doing at solo, you know, there were times where a chapter would end and you'd be like, well, I needed to find a ride home or we were out of money. You know, a lot of people see you on MTV or they see any musician for that matter on MTV playing and you're like playing Coliseums and rock shows. You feel that person is set for life and they're, you know, a rock and roll lifestyle. But But it's not necessarily true. Money doesn't grow on trees when it comes to rock and roll stars.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. You really have to fight for it, you know, and you have to keep track of it and know where it goes and who's got it. And, you know, I ask to see paperwork for each show that we do. My managers now that I have are wonderful. They run everything through me. There's no shows that are booked unless I okay them. Everything is very transparent with my business managers. I know what's coming in. I see where everything goes and who's getting what and how much everybody's getting. So there's no secrets.
You know, when you look back on your career, and you're still rocking, but you look back on the 80s, and one of the interesting things happened where in the early 90s, metal kind of fell off a cliff. Grunge replaced it. Alternative rock kind of came on. And it was so sudden for a lot of bands who you know, weren't named Van Halen, that just sort of they lost the support from record companies. They lost play on MTV and other places, radio. Talk about that for you, because, you know, you tried to continue on, but the record companies and everybody else sort of lost their taste for heavy metal.
They did. I think it affected the record companies a lot, too. They weren't quite sure what direction they were going in. And the Van Halens had to go away for a little while because they didn't fit. I'm glad that decade is over. I'm not really a fan of that decade because I think there was a lot missing musically during that decade. I can feel the difference between an 80s artist and a 90s artist. There's things missing because it's when things started to turn digital and they weren't so much from your musical hands, your ability as a musician to be able to pick up a guitar and play something without a click track or play something that wasn't digitally recorded. You know, everything went from analog to digital. So I think that something got missed in the translation. If you don't fill it in somehow musically, then you do lose something there.
Lita Ford is the author of the memoir, Living Like a Runaway. Lita Ford, of course, the queen of heavy metal. She's going to be signing books at North Central College in Naperville tomorrow night. Lita Ford, thank you so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight.
Of course. Thank you. No problem. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, it's a download here on WGN Radio. Justin Kaufman, Lita Ford. Man, I'm telling you, I could do 2 hours.
How about that?
We didn't talk about a lot of stuff in the book. I wanted to talk. There was a moment where she was having a tryst with Edward Van Halen, and her ex-boyfriend climbed up the balcony and surprised them. And Edward got so freaked out that he went and locked himself in the bathroom, and then climbed himself through the little window in the bathroom to jump down 4 stories the Hollywood apartment off of Sunset, and then was running down the Sunset with no shoes and his, you know, barely his jeans, you know, whole thing. And someone's like, "You're Eddie Van Halen." He's like, "All right."
I could picture it. I could totally picture that happening.
Right? That's the beauty of it. You're like, wow. It's funny. A couple years ago, I was working with Frankie Vivid, Michelle Lamour's manager, and I guess say husband. It's a husband now. Anyway, we were working with on trying to do a musical that was like Rock of Ages. It was really funny. Like, this is before Rock of Ages came out.
Yeah,
and we were going to do a musical because and it was going to be based on a life of Poison, the band Poison. And we were writing it together. We had a whole script, a whole thing.
So
we spent
good.
Like weeks on it, and then we stopped working on it because we were kind of like, all right, this is getting really cheesy. Because it was a classic L.A. story of, like, girl comes to L.A., and then, you know, the guy comes to L.A. and they meet, and, you know, they're going to be stars, and he's a, wow, this is an amazing song that they have. How are they going to, blah, 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 blah. I saw Rock of Ages. It's the exact same thing. Like, I was like, I had a hard time because I was like, did we just, like, someone see it and then say, or not see the whole thing, but see the idea of it, and like we just kind of went in that direction? Or were we at the same time writing the same cheesy musical that someone took to Broadway and took it all the way to the top? Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, I mean, it was this same kind of thing. Like, we were kind of using, we were kind of tongue-in-cheeking it because we kind of wanted, and that was the hardest part, and that's why we shelved it, is we wanted it to be kind of kitschy. We wanted it to be Poison the Musical. We wanted it to be like, yeah, Nothing But a Good Time based on the music of Poison, you know?
Yes.
And it would be a fun, like, romp, off-Broadway, off-loop kind of theater show. And we just, you know, we had a lot of projects, got shelved, never went anywhere. But then, I mean, when I watched, I saw the movie. I never saw the play Rock of Ages, but I saw the movie, and I'm like, huh, wow, it's kind of the same plot line. And I was like, oh, I'm glad we didn't move any further on that. And I think that's when we kind of were like, all right, maybe we're not cut out for this since we didn't live it. But Lita Ford, she could do it.
Well, I don't know. I feel like you have it in you. I feel.
No, thank you. Right. I think it'd be a great. Like, we could do a whole, we had a whole thing around Fallen Angel, the song. Remember the song Fallen Angel?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I mean, to me, when I hear song titles like Nothing But a Good Time or Fallen Angel, or in this book, Lita Ford talking about Kiss Me Deadly, or any of the bands that she references from Van Halen to Guns N' Roses is in here, Motley Crue, Black Sabbath, any of the bands that are like Judas Priest. Is there a shared enthusiasm for that, or is that just you and I just kind of know those? I mean,
there's a shared, because you go to any street festival, you know, in the summer, and there's like a countless of those 80s hair band cover bands that people just go nuts for.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it has to be.
16 Candles or whatever. No, maybe that they do like more 80s, new wave
type stuff. Yeah,
but.
There has to be. I mean, it's so interesting. I guess they still do it. I mean, she does the cruises. She does like a Rock of Ages cruise where she goes out on a Bahamas cruise and you can go see all the acts. It's part of the gig.
Oh, man. I got a honeymoon coming up.
Hey.
Revisit some things.
Come on, man. I got you a surprise, babe. I went to a party last Saturday night. No, I just wonder if that's, you know, if that's the case or not.
Yeah, it is. It's the case.
Oh, man. Such good stuff.
Took down the 90s. She took down the whole 90s.
I thought that was the best part of the interview, is that her saying that there you could tell the difference between an 80s artist and a 90s artist. It's because of the transition to digital, and that and that's here. It's hard to hear that because you think of the grunge bands of Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and all you'd think is feeling.
Yeah.
I don't think click track. I don't think anything of that. So it's surprising to me that she would say that. I would think maybe some of the stuff that was commercialized in the late 80s around heavy metal would be more kind of, you know, fake. But her saying that the feeling was in the 80s bands. Yeah, there you go. It's a download here on WGN with you till 11 o'clock. Justin Kaufman coming up. Jay Chandrasekhar, one of the men behind Broken Lizard. They are currently shooting, and we'll ask them all about it, Super Troopers 2, which is crowdfunded. This is an amazing experience where they were able to get a lot of their movies done through the Hollywood system. Then Hollywood kind of turned their back on it. We'll talk about the sort of the economy of making small indie-sized films in Hollywood. It's just not there anymore. So they had amassed a great following of people who enjoy Super Troopers, enjoyed Broken Lizard's work, and they were able to go straight to there. We talked about this, Pete, back in June, maybe, and they were able to get the money, and they're starting to shoot. And you know, people who gave money to the Kickstarter fund are able to see all the stuff before everybody else. It's really interesting. So we'll talk to Jay coming up about that. They're in town at Park West tomorrow night. Well, this past week, the MacArthur Foundation awarded 14 Chicago arts organizations with grants. It's the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. The grant ranged from $200,000 to $1 million, depending on the company's budget. This is a big award. It means life or death for many theater companies. And this year, it's all Chicago, which is amazing. This year's winners include the Red Orchid Theater, the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic, the Young Chicago Authors, Chicago Opera Theater, among many, many others. Of course, the Albany Park Theater Project, who have been a guest on this program before. David Finer is the artistic director of the Albany Park Theater Project. He was on with us back in August to talk about Feast that was at the Goodman. David, congrats on the MacArthur Grant.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here, Justin.
So, I mean, talk about how exciting, I mean, for you guys to get this kind of grant, that's pretty impressive.
You know, it's a dream come true kind of grant. It's a game-changing grant for us. It's by far the largest grant in our history. And, of course, the, you know, the MacArthur Award has been around for about 10 years.
Right.
And it's just a very prestigious recognition as well. So, you know, we've been receiving congratulations from all around the world, in addition to a game-changing grant to establish an operating reserve that helps us achieve long-term financial stability.
And that's really what this grant is. This isn't sort of like, here's some money, dudes, put up some cool lights. This is really about giving you reserves and the opportunity to create an effective theater company.
That's absolutely right. You know, the purpose is to create a reserve that you know, that ensures that if there are unexpected expenses or an unanticipated loss in revenue, you know, those kind of things can throw a small mid-sized nonprofit just into turmoil, mm-hmm. and can cause you to collapse. And this gives us, you know, a backup fund that that we can draw on to keep going. And in a case like that, it also means that, you know, that we have a fund that we can use for innovation as well, to kind of seed some innovative projects of our own for the future.
Well, I want to talk to you soon here about Learning Curve, which is coming up here. You guys are starting rehearsals. This is an amazing show we're going to talk about in just a second. Joining us on the line now, Kate Fox. Kate is a senior program officer at MacArthur Foundation. Kate, thanks for joining us, and thank you for shilling out so much money.
Well, thanks for having me, and you're welcome.
Kate, let me ask you this. You know, MacArthur is an international organization. This is not something that just gives money to Chicago theater and arts programs. Why is every recipient from Chicago?
That's a great question. Yeah, you know, the award, which, as David mentioned, began in 2006, was really a way for us to recognize exceptional organizations that are key contributors to the core fields that the foundation is actually working in. So this means our local work, our national work, and our international work. So the Chicago focus is really an opportunity to call out our commitment to our hometown. Our foundation has been thinking about the way that we've been doing our grant making, and we've been making some shifts in our framework. And as we make shifts, I think sometimes our hometown community gets a little nervous about what that might mean for the investment, the long-term investment that we've made in the
right.
city. So this year actually represents three firsts. It represents the first year we've ever focused this award on organizations in Chicago. This year represents a first for the first time we've ever really focused in a particular area of our work, so the arts and culture portfolio, which is only focused here in Chicago. And it's the first year that our Chicago arts and culture organizations have actually been eligible for the award.
Wow.
Previously, they hadn't even been eligible. So this is really, this is just a wonderful opportunity for us to celebrate what a vibrant place Chicago is. And it's our hometown, it's our headquarters, it's where most of the staff live. So, you know, it's something that we can all really celebrate.
So let me ask you about that, because, yeah, I mean, the 14 companies that are getting money, I mean, they're going to get, this is a one-time thing. They're not every year going to be up for the same amount of money in the grant, almost like another foundation might do it, where each year you get an award. This is a one-time thing. Do you see yourself continuing that trend and doing more Chicago companies, or was this a kind of a one-year experiment for you guys?
Right. So I think it's really important to remember that these are organizations that are within our giving portfolio already. So most of these are organizations like David's, which have been in relationship with MacArthur for years. So while the award is a one-time shot of a large influx of institutional grant-making, the investment is one that is ongoing in terms of our own grant-making. So that's just to suggest that it is both a short-term investment mm-hmm. and a long-term relationship. And, you know, as to whether or not this is the path going forward, we're in a period of evaluation for the MacArthur Award, And while we were doing the evaluation, we decided we would do some experimentation, which is how we ended up with the Chicago class. And I think that going forward, we're going to have the opportunity to consider the experiences of all of these past recipients, thinking about what it really takes for organizations to become sustainable over the long term. And I think that's really going to inform the way we go forward. So it's probably not something that we can expect next year for arts and culture, sadly. But, you know, it is something that the foundation is thinking very carefully about.
Well, I mean, it was an amazing year for arts and culture. Kate Fox is a senior program officer at MacArthur, at the MacArthur Foundation. We're talking about the grants that were the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions went to all arts and culture companies here in Chicago. Kate Fox, thanks for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
You bet.
I mean, it's amazing, right? I mean, it's amazing to think, like, there are so many places they could put their money, and they put it into 14 companies doing arts and culture here in Chicago.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, and one of the great things about the MacArthur Award is you can't apply for it. So you get a call right out of the blue from, I got a call out of the blue from Kate and said, you know, saying, we've selected you for this award. You've been through an elaborate vetting process. We believe wholeheartedly in the mission of Albany Park Theater Project, in the artistic work that youth artists created Albany Park Theater Project, and at the youth development that's achieved through the creation of original art by teenagers in our city. We believe in your mission. We believe in your track record. We believe in what you can do in the future. So we've selected you for this, and we've decided to give you this $400,000 award.
It's amazing, David. Congrats. Okay, let's take a break. We come back. I want to hear about Learning Curve. This is a show that's in rehearsals right now, an immersive experience that puts you inside a Chicago public school, essentially.
That's right.
The Albany Park Theater Project just got a huge grant from the MacArthur Foundation. We'll continue our conversation with David Finer. When we come back here on The Download, stay with us. Back with David Finer here on The Download. He's the artistic director of the Albany Park Theater Project, which won him, I guess you say won, you won a grant, was the recipient?
Received. Received a MacArthur Award, yes.
There you go, a $400,000 award, a very nice award for their work. And you guys have been such a staple in that community and the theater community here. I mean, just quick, the elevator pitch for your company, because it's a youth-based theater
company. Albany Park Theater Project is a multi-ethnic youth theater ensemble that inspires people to envision a more just and beautiful world. So the teens in our ensemble create all original performance works based on interviews with working class and immigrant communities throughout the city of Chicago. And actually, our 19th birthday is coming up, so we're about to start our third decade.
Wow, that's crazy to think about.
Started with a budget of $15,000 in 1997, and now
I remember when you guys started too. That's crazy. And I also would say that when we had you on talk about Feast,
that's right,
that show was a tremendous success. And now, I mean, the show that you're working on now, the show that's in rehearsals, Learning Curve, seems to be even bigger. Talk about this show, because this is an immersive, and we say that word, we just throw it around, but
right,
it's essentially a story about Chicago public schools,
right,
kids in schools, and it's a school. What is it?
Right. So Learning Curve is an experience that places you within the walls of a Chicago public school and in the shoes of its students. So like all of our Albany Park Theater Project performances, it's based on interviews. In this case, based on interviews with students, teachers, parents, and administrators at Chicago public schools. All the interviews conducted by our youth ensemble members. And then, rather than taking those interviews and adapting them into a play and putting it on stage, what we've done is we have inhabited an entire school building with those stories, and we bring the audience into the building. So the building itself becomes a star of the show. And I want to keep some secrets, because part of the experience is the mystery of
and
not
it's on
knowing.
This, it's on the summer. So
that's right.
Yeah, right.
And it's in the summer. So part of it is, you know, but you come through, you know, you come through the front door of this school building, and you begin a journey that will take you to spaces throughout the building, experiencing scenes and performances in sites throughout the building. And it's going to be we're creating it in collaboration with this company from New
yes.
York.
a very, very prestigious company, Third Rail Projects. If anyone who's paying attention to theater right now, this is the hot theater company out of New York City, out of Brooklyn.
That's right.
They kind of specialize in kind of pushing the envelope.
They do. I think they're really about reimagining the relationship between audience and contemporary performance, and they merge dance and theater. They have a long-running show in Brooklyn called Then She Fell. They've just opened a new show called The Grand Paradise in Brooklyn, got rave review in the New York Times. They're about to open a show this spring in Denver, and we're really proud to bring them to Chicago for the first time. And, you know, they don't make work with teenagers. And so this is the first time that they've collaborated this way with another company. First time, as far as we know, the first time that a youth company has ever created a large-scale immersive performance like this.
And it's... You know, you're teaching, you're not only teaching, you know, oral history, you're teaching journalism in a way, you're teaching storytelling,
right?
But you're teaching theater. And the idea that teenagers are going to get an opportunity to work with Third Rail and work in an immersive style, it's breaking the fourth wall. I mean, what do you expect? How do you expect the kids to react to the idea that this kind of theater, which is very advanced, and sometimes, you know, theater actors and producers, they don't get to this part until 10, 15 years into their career. How do you expect them to react?
You know, we've done a couple of workshops of Learning Curve, and they've taken to it so readily. I mean, our company has a culture of saying yes, and I think our teenagers, you know, they just come in with a can-do attitude of, you know, yeah, throw any idea at us, we're gonna run with it. And they've just leapt at the opportunity to, you know, to really engage directly with audience members and share these stories and take these stories, you know, from their lives and from the lives of their teachers and, you know, and their schools, and bring them directly to audience members in a very, I would say, you know, in a visceral way, in an intimate way. And, you know, one of the things that the folks at Third Rail say is that immersive performance in some ways takes just exceptional social skills, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
You know, it's about being able to relate directly to your audience.
Yeah.
And so as you're
Difference between audience and interacting with strangers.
That's
really what you're doing, because the audience isn't going to be seated in the kind of traditional way. I mean, there's one thing to interact with your audience. That's like a stand-up comedian. This is more like you're going to have to, you know, have face-to-face interaction, communication with people who paid tickets.
That's absolutely right. And one of the interesting things, and I think challenges that our teens are taking on extremely well, is that, you know, you've got 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds playing teachers in this production, and, you know, about 70-80% of our audience is adults. So you've got, you know, a 16-year-old becoming a teacher in relation to an adult in this world, and that's a negotiation of authority and status. It's some really interesting stuff happening.
Well, I can't wait. I mean, it's not coming out till June, you said?
July. We open in July.
Oh, man. And
I know you're gonna have to wait, but just you know what? Have us back a few more times, Justin. We'll talk about it.
You get
the way.
One grant over there, you know, and everything gets pushed back. No, so in July, this will be a big project. This will be the summer thing to do here in Chicago theater.
And if I can make actually a quick shout out, you talk about grants. We also, specifically for Learning Curve, we won an Impact 100 Chicago grant. It was a $100,000 grant. Specifically for Learning Curve. And I want to make a shout out to them. It's a women-led charity, philanthropy, and we could not make Learning Curve without their investment.
There you go. David Feiner is the Artistic Director of the Albany Park Theater Project. Learning Curve will be coming out this summer. We'll have you back.
Thank you.
Definitely talk about this, and I can't wait to see it. And congratulations on not only the grant that you got for Learning Curve, but the MacArthur grant as well.
Thank you so much, Justin.
Coming up, I'm very excited about this. One of the guys behind Broken Lizards, Broken Lizards Super Troopers, Broken Lizards Club Dread, Broken Lizards Beer Fest, Broken Lizards Super Troopers 2. How about that? That's coming out. Jay Chandrasekhar will be here. We'll talk with him about his career in comedy. They're playing Park West tomorrow night. I'm very excited to talk with him. He has Chicago roots, too. I was looking it up, and he was born in the Chicago area, so talk with him. We'll also find out more about this Bulls win. What?
I'm telling you.
You know what? I said it all along. I've been saying it all along. Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, both the problem.
Well, they did it tonight without D. Rose.
Right?
I got a right hamstring thing. It's a hamstring tonight, coach.
You know what? If they can, I mean, I've been saying it all. I've been saying it all year. It's Mike Dunleavy's team. He's just got to show up. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez takes over at 11. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Well, Broken Lizard, the comedy group behind movies like Super Troopers and Beer Fest, are taking over Chicago starting tomorrow night. They'll be on stage at the Park West for Meow What? A live comedy extravaganza. And they're going to be holding a beer pong tournament in Wrigleyville at Barleycorn's on Clark Street. This is Saturday during the day. It's called Beer Fest Chicago 2016. The group of comedians met in college at Colgate University. They relocated to New York City, did stage shows. But the group got their recognition from indie film. Their first feature, Puddle Cruiser, went to Sundance. And their follow-up, Super Troopers, was a bona fide hit for Fox Searchlight. The film was made for about $1 million, and it made, $95 million. Come on, man. That's crazy. That's crazy to think about, that the film that was made for $1 million, and with video and everything else, Super Troopers made $95 million. That success paved the way for three more features and much, much more work in Hollywood. Today, the group is hard at work at Super Troopers 2, which was made possible from crowdsourcing. Super Troopers is Eric Stolhansky, Kevin Heffernan, Steve Lemmy, Paul Soder, and my guest tonight, Jay Chandrasekhar. Jay, thanks for being here.
Hey, man. I'm very, very happy to be back in Chicago.
I didn't recognize you have Chicago roots. You were born here.
I was born in Cook County Hospital.
Wow.
And grew up in Hinsdale, Illinois, just about 20 minutes out. And, you know, I did my first stand-up act at a place, I think it was called the Matchstick in Lincoln Park. And then I was part of the Improv Olympic back when I was 19, when Chris Farley was still there and Dave Koechner and some of those guys.
Right.
And I just came in for like 6 months. But yeah, I'm a hardcore Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, Cubs fan.
That's great. I had no idea. I mean, I've kind of known you for a little while, but I had no idea that you were actually from this area.
Yeah,
that's cool. Time. Well, let's talk about it, because, you know, you're in town to do a stage show, which is sort of your roots. I mean, you guys started as a improv or a sketch group at Colgate, really on a whim. I mean, the idea was you wanted to get some sketches together for a quick show.
Well, you know, I had done the Improv Olympic here in Chicago, which was entirely improvised. So you get a word from the audience and you do like a 40-minute show. So I went back to Colgate and I was bragging about how much I had worked in the real comedy world of Chicago and how, oh, it's too bad Colgate didn't have an improv group, and oh, if only you could have seen what I saw. And then some guy who had a theater group, he was leaving to go to London for the semester, he goes, hey, why don't you start a comedy group, do an improv thing like you're always talking about, while I'm in London, you can take over the theater group and do that show. And I'm like, you know, like, I was totally unqualified, I was a total rookie at it. But so I said no. And then a few weeks later, he called me back and he goes, dude, I'm in a bind. I need someone to do a show.
You got
to
do it.
And I said no again. And he calls me from London and he goes, you have to do it. That's just the deal. You have to do it. And I'm like, fine. I'll do it. So then I went around and got all the funniest people I knew, none of whom were actors, because, you know, there was not a huge acting thing at Colgate. It was just these friends of mine who were funny. And I'm like, okay, we're going to do an improv show. And I would try to teach these people improv, and I was a total rookie. And that went so poorly that I'm like, we better shift gears. So I'm like, let's do a show like Saturday Night Live. We'll just write sketches. And so we just started writing sketches. And for whatever reason, we happened to be funny and did a good job. And it became a huge hit at Colgate. It's still going on there 20 years later.
The story goes that you kind of reunited. You all went to New York City and you did shows in Greenwich Village and other places.
Yeah.
But that was sort of the start, was what you did on the college community. But it wasn't the stage shows that launched Broken Lizard. It was the film stuff, because the films, you quickly went kind of away from the idea of being a stage group, and because you had film chops and others in the group had film chops, you were able to do more things in that form.
Well, you know, the hard thing about film is that there's such huge crews and the technical knowledge is so high that most people are kind of intimidated by it. But, you know, when we started the group, we were such fans of the SNL shorts they do, the video shorts, that we decided we would do that. We basically just copied SNL. I did a monologue, we did sketches, and we did short films. And at Colgate, the short films were really crude and simple and not really high quality. But as we went to New York, we started to make better ones and better ones and better ones. And eventually we decided, you know, it was sort of the indie film revolution was happening in New York. And so we decided...
Well, this would be like early 90s, right?
And so we decided, you know, films like Slacker and Clerks and Brothers McMullen and were Reservoir Dogs, they were all making for $1 million and under. A lot of those for $60,000, $100,000, whatever. So we decided to put our money together and try to make, you know, our own film. We wanted to be Monty Python.
Right.
And, you know, I took one class at NYU and learned how to load a camera and how to edit and sort of how to light. And we just started diving into it.
And just think about what you just said and juxtapose it to now. If somebody wanted to do that, they could do. I mean, there's so many options with digital filmmaking and the idea to put it on YouTube and think. We're talking, you know, early 90s. I mean, it's more than just kind of figuring out lighting and how to load a camera. I mean, that technology wasn't that accessible.
No, I mean, you literally had to load film into a 16mm camera and have a sync sound recorder on, and it was high. There were a lot of people involved that required to do this.
There's a little bit of pressure. It had to be funny. You didn't want to make stuff that wasn't funny, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, but at the time in New York, we were the only comedy group making videos. There wasn't a single other comedy group.
Wow.
Like there was the groups in New York at the time were us and the State. Like, and the State were doing fully. They were, you know, those guys, Tom Lennon,
Those
guys. They were doing stage shows. And we were doing a stage show, and we had videos. And MTV actually called both of us up and said, we're giving one of you two a show. And so they came to us on Friday night, and we murdered it. I mean, we killed it. It was one of the best shows ever. And then they went to see them on Saturday, and they got the show. So at the time, we were like, well, okay, so now they have the sketch show. There's SNL. There's In Living Color. There's, you know, there's no need for more sketch shows. So we said, if we're going to make it, we got to go make it in independent film.
Oh, interesting.
And so we just veered off.
It was almost a business decision.
We had no choice. Yeah, rejected us. We would have been a TV group who would have made TV sketches, but they rejected us. So we were like, well, our only hope is to make a film.
Well, I mean, others may say, you know, stick around in the MTV knockoff, the Comedy Central, whatever, come along and get you guys.
Yeah, but I mean.
The idea that you are thinking ahead and you're thinking like, as you know, right out of college, you know, sketch comedians, you're thinking as a business. I mean, you realize that if you want to get into the business, you got to go into film. And that's an interesting insight for kids who have no experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like there are two ways to approach show business. You can be proactive or reactive, right? And guys like Brad Pitt, who look like Brad Pitt and are that good actors, they can be reactive. They can get scripts come into them and go, I'll do that one. We had to create our own opportunities because, you know, the people weren't giving us the scripts and the money and the thing. We had to bully our way into the business and say, we're good, we're funny, this, that. And, a lot of people try and don't make it, but we happened to, you know, things lined up for us and we got lucky and we were good.
Well, let me ask you, we'll start with Puddle Cruisers because Puddle Cruiser was a movie that you guys made. I mean, this was indie of the indie. I mean, it was a movie that was based on your college experience. It was a movie that went to Sundance. It got some experience. You got some experience under your belt on how to, you know, be indie filmmakers. What was that when you think back to that initial feature experience? What did it teach you guys?
Well, you know, before that, we made a film called The Tinfoil Monkey Agenda. It was like a half an hour movie about an invasion of a South American country, and there was a CNN crew embedded with a snatch and grab team that went in to grab basically Manuel Noriega, and then they keep it all live on the news, and it was basically Wag the Dog before Wag the Dog came out. No, they didn't see our movie and copy it, trust me. Nobody saw our film. It was 30 minutes and it was like an awkward length because you couldn't. Film festivals wouldn't put it in because, you know, they want a bunch of like 2 minute to 11 minute things where they can put it together into a 90 minute.
Right. Move it along. Right?
Yeah. 30 minutes. You're like, you better be the greatest movie ever made. And it wasn't. And so we made this film, but we really learned how to make the technical side of making movies. And we learned how cameras work and how, you know, angles worked. And so when it came time to make Puddle Cruiser. Let me back up. We wanted to make a feature film because we wanted people to see it. And people were making movies and getting them in theaters. And we thought, okay, we're going to make a movie. But the longest thing we'd ever written was this sort of 30-minute thing.
Right.
And it wasn't structured like a movie. The story wasn't like a regular movie. And so we didn't really know how to do it. We're like, well, maybe we should just make a bunch of sketches and do like a Monty Python sketch movie. And I had written about 60 pages. Like back in college, I wrote about a relationship I had with a girl who I started dating this girl. Her name was Denise, and she was like already dating her high school boyfriend still. So we were just kind of hanging around and just having fun. And slowly we got more serious, and she eventually broke up with the guy. Now, one day while we were in bed, kind of, you know, just hanging around, she said, you know, my old boyfriend, he knows about you. And I said, oh, yeah. He goes, yeah. And he wants to kill you. And I was like, oh, that's funny. That's funny. And she goes, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I mean, whatever. I mean, I'm not really worried about it. And she says, yeah, I know, but he's kind of big. I mean, he played high school football. And I'm like, yeah, but so what? I mean, I'm not really worried about it. And she goes, no, it's not a big deal. I'm not saying anything. And it became this sort of macho sort of situation where I was like, you think your old boyfriend's tougher than me. And so to sort of overcome this, I joined the rugby team at our school. And in reality, this guy was also on his rugby team at his school. And we ended up
playing
games. So that's what the movie is about.
That's right.
That's what the movie is about. And it's about like modern day machismo.
Right.
And so I'd written about 60 pages, just a bunch of scenes, and I showed them to the guys, and they were like, this is funny, but it's a romance. It's a guy and a girl thing. We need to have a movie where five of us can be in it. So we sort of rewrote it and added characters and sort of flipped it around and, you know, just kind of built up the other parts. And then we eventually had our film, and we said, we think this is a good story. We don't know about three-act structure. We don't know about typical, you know, we just said, let's do it. So...
Well, yeah. Well, the movie got to Sundance. Well, let's take a break. We come back because it's a precursor to Super Troopers.
Yeah,
which is the same. I mean, you guys learned the experience of putting a feature together, which got some attention, and you're able to get a little scrape together some money to put Super Troopers together. At, I guess it would have been the late '90s. Jay Chandrasekhar is my guest tonight. He's one of the members of Broken Lizard. They are on stage at the Park West tomorrow night, pretty much sold out. But if sitting down and watching a comedy show is not your thing, you can go be part of the the Beer Fest Chicago 2016, which is a beer pong tournament that the guys from Broken Lizard will be involved in at the Barleycorns on Clark Street in Wrigleyville on Saturday. So you can look that up and go be a part of that. More with Jay when we come back here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Jay Chandrasekhar. He is one of the men behind Broken Lizard. They're playing Park West tomorrow night, and they're also doing a beer pong tournament at Barleycorn on Clark Street Saturday during the day, Beer Fest Chicago 2016. You can find all that stuff online. Jay, we were talking about the beginning, like we were kind of leading up to Super Troopers. I said in the beginning of the segment, the intro, $1 million to make that movie. It made $95 million, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy to think that Super Troopers made that much money.
Well, it was the moment in time when everybody was buying DVDs. They were everywhere. People were just picking them up. They were stocking stuffers. They were just, you know, every room you'd go into for, you know, eventually when we would go and visit college campuses, they'd all have a copy.
Right.
And it was, you know, it was
amazing. Well, it's legendary
moment.
To think Super Troopers is among movies like The Big Lebowski and other movies like that that took on this cult following and were you had to have it in every dorm room in every college. Did you guys, I mean, you couldn't have pictured that. Did you think about that when you were making Super Troopers?
We made Puddle Cruiser. We killed at Sundance. We won the Hamptons Film Festival. We killed at South by Southwest. And yet we weren't famous enough, so nobody bought the film. Like, there was a company that wanted to offer us $0 for the film, and they would put it out, and we should have taken it, but we didn't. And then we went back to them, and they said, no. so we were beaten dogs when we went into Sundance with Super Troopers. I mean, by the way, after Puddle Cruiser, we went around to all the studios and said, we want to make this movie next. We're
Here
Highway
it is.
Patrol.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were like, can Ben Affleck play Thorny?
Right.
And I'm like, no, I'm playing that character. They're like, yeah, then no. So, I mean, everybody said no to us there. Every financier.
Was that really was it when you go and pitch a movie in Hollywood, a lot of times they're like, well, Broken Lizard, yeah, you wrote this, but who's going to star
in
it?
You're
like, we're in it.
Yeah, we're in it. And they said, then we're not making it.
That's not the model.
Yeah. Right. So everybody, including Fox Searchlight, who eventually bought it, said no. Every independent financier said no. And so we were out of luck. And a friend of mine's dad, a friend of mine called me and she said, my dad is an investment banker and he's retiring and he's written a script and he needs some notes. Would you mind doing me the hugest favor and reading his script? Okay. And I said, yeah, okay, sure.
All right.
So I get he gets on the phone with me and he's telling me about a script and I'm like, okay, okay.
He's like, it's a highway patrol story.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. And he goes, I said, do you want me to read it? He goes, yeah, I think I do. Would you mind sending me a sample of your writing just so I know, you know? And he was auditioning me and I'm like, oh God, I'm doing this favor for my friend. So I send him Super Troopers. And like a week later, he calls me up and I'm like, and he had sent me his script in the meantime and I had notes. And I said, hey, so you want to talk about your script? He goes, yeah. What's going on with this Super Troopers thing? And I'm like, well, we're raising money. And he goes, if you can make it for $1 million, I'll do it. And I was like, what? Okay. And so I ran to my producer. I said, can we make it for $1 million? He goes, either we make it for $1 million or we make it for nothing.
Right, right.
And I was like, okay. So then we did it. I mean, we made it for $1 million to 100,000 and 260,000.
How much money, you know, for you guys coming off of Puddle Cruiser, how much money did you think Super Troopers needed to be made for?
I don't know. I
you
mean,
know, what do you do?
We were going to make it for 3.5. We were going to make it for 5. We were going to, you know.
Yeah, right. What suffered by making a movie for $1 million that you thought was going to be for $3 million? Just longer car chases and stuff like that?
I mean, look, we didn't know. I just had made one movie. I didn't know what I was doing really. Or I didn't, you know what? I didn't know I knew what I was doing. It turned out when you watch a movie, you're like, okay, I did know what I was doing. But at the time, I was pretty sure I didn't know what I was doing. And so you're just shooting these scenes and you're like, okay, I think we got it. And, you know, we have to shoot it the whole thing in 30 days and that's it. And so there was, you know, there's just intense pressure. We would have shot it in 35 days.
Right.
And it would have been a little... Probably would have been the same exact movie.
And it was the same concept that the movies before or after Beer Fest and others where you guys, you know, you don't necessarily, I mean, you direct the films, but, you know, you don't necessarily have an executive producer. You don't actually have somebody who's like, this is how we're doing it and this is the shot. You guys are very communal. You have a very communal spirit at Broken Lizard where all of you kind of make the final decision.
I mean, you know, we tried to start the group in a way that so that if you ever asked who wrote that joke, we'd all say, I don't know, we all wrote it. Because it's really, you know, when you have a group, it's really should be about the group mind and the group credit, you know. And so we all write these things together. We don't even, I don't even cast the movie until we get to draft 16 of the script so that nobody is writing for themselves. You know, you might play any of these parts. You're writing for all of them. And then, you know, 16 drafts, a year and a half into the process, you're like, okay, you're that guy, you're that guy. And then you start writing for yourself. That's how it works. But
well, let's take a break for the news. Okay. We'll come back and talk more about your career because what I really want to get at is you guys are making Super Troopers 2 now. To make that much money off of Super Troopers and to find yourself having to go to your audience or go to your to crowdsourcing because Hollywood's like, meh, it's ridiculous. Times have changed. Jay Chandrasekhar is my guest tonight. He's one of the members of Broken Lizard, which is on stage at the Park West tomorrow night, which pretty much sold out. But you can go to the beer pong tournament, which will be at Barleycorn on Clark Street. It's called Beer Fest Chicago 2016. That's on Saturday during the day. More with Jay when we come back. Stay with us. There we go. Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, a member of Broken Lizard, Jay Chandrasekhar. Jay is in town with Broken Lizard. They're doing a show at Park West tomorrow. It's a benefit for Halcyon Theater Company here in Chicago. Also doing the Beer Fest Chicago 2016, a beer pong tournament. Why not?
Why not?
Why not? That's on Saturday during the day at Barleycorn up in Wrigleyville. I mean, you had so much success from Super Troopers that it really kind of funneled you guys right into mainstream Hollywood. I mean, you got a picture deal with Sony for a little bit,
yeah,
right?
We had a deal with Sony. We had a production deal at Warner Brothers. And, you know, we made a couple movies with Fox. And, yeah, it was great.
It was great. And you know, those movies, and Beer Fest included, we talk about the beer pong tournament on Saturday, they all kind of followed the same formula that Super Troopers did, where it was like it had medium success in the theaters, but it was what
huge,
people did.
Huge video.
Yeah,
huge.
With video. I mean, at a certain point, is that what people were investing in Broken Lizard, were the studios investing in?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, they were willing to make it at a certain number, because they knew the theatrical was going to be a certain number, and then they knew the video would be massive. I mean, and it's just been our way. Our fans tend to be a little slow on the uptake. They're not slow people. They're just, they're like, yeah, yeah, I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that. And then they get to it on video.
Does the sort of end of video and DVDs and a move to more on demand, does it hurt a model like that? Does it hurt the
Well, the end of the DVDs has model? Hurt the whole old show business model for sure, because you counted on that to sort of break even on films. But Netflix has come in and is buying up rights like crazy at high prices. Amazon is competing with them and buying up rights like crazy. I mean, for a good long time, I would say the last 10, 12 years, we've been witnessing sort of the death of independent film, because you couldn't take a movie to Sundance anymore and sell it and end up, you know, even making your money back. And then this year is sort of the beginning, I think, of a new wave of indie film, because Amazon and Netflix were the two biggest buyers. You know, I mean, they bought a movie for $10 million. Someone else bought a movie for $8 million. I mean, they were buying in multi-million dollar movies. And Fox Searchlight bought a movie for $18.5 million at Sundance. So, I mean, and once that happens, all the money people who had thought about investing in a movie are like, oh, that's okay. I'm going to do it. Right. Maybe I'll make some money. So a lot more money is going to come funneling into this business this year.
Well, you know, the economy, obviously, I think it was 2008, 2009, you saw Hollywood react to sort of the financial collapse of the world. But you guys kind of got caught up in that, because you made movies at a certain number. I mean, it was, you know, mid-level, small budget stuff. And it doesn't seem like Hollywood wanted to make those kind of movies anymore.
Well, they you know, I talked to the president of Warner Brothers about it. And he brought me in, he said, I want you here to make $100 million movies, comedies. And I said, you know, everybody resents $100 million comedies. You take two big
stars. What's a $100 million comedy?
Well,
Dumber?
No, that was like 29 or 30, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's more like, you know, something with Robert Downey Jr. and Vince Vaughn. You know, two great guys, right? But each one of them costs $25 million.
Right.
And then you make, that's 50, and then you make the movie for 50, right? So, right. But what he said was, I need two big faces to put on the poster. And I said, you know, instead of making a $100 million comedy, why don't we make five $20 million comedies, or four, whatever, 25. And he said, what's the most a movie like that's going to make? And I said, 100. And he goes, yeah, it's a double. He goes, I need to hit grand slams. He goes, I need to move the stock price. He goes, I need movies that can make, that not necessarily will make, but can make $250 million. I need to put the faces on the poster and have it sell in Spain and Germany and, you know, all over the world. And I need movie stars, period. So I need to make $100 million comedies.
So up until this point, what you're saying is the resurgence of independent film. I mean, we would never see a Super Troopers again.
If it had been made in the past 8-9 years, it would have never been in the theaters for sure. It would have probably not even been made. I mean, you know, if there's no chance of theatrical release and no chance of making your money back, people don't invest in movies.
Right.
Now that Netflix and Amazon and it's forcing Searchlight to pay more money, I think it could start something big.
Well, let's talk about Super Troopers 2, because this was a crowd. We had Eric and Kevin on earlier in the summer talking about your big campaign. You guys raised $5 million through your fans. I mean, you got out of the Hollywood circuit of making films and went straight to your loyal audience, which has bought all your DVDs and follows you to the different shows. And they ponied up. I mean, $5 million to make Super Troopers 2 outside of Hollywood.
Well, I mean, you know, we went to Fox Searchlight, which is the indie label at Fox, and they're famous for movies like Hotel Budapest and, you know, Chocolat. And so, you know, I say that not to make fun of them. They're the very best independent film distributors in show business, but they have highbrow tastes. Like, they like to make French movies and English movies about period pieces.
That's indie film, right?
That's where they want to spend their money. So we went to them and they said, look, we want to make Super Troopers 2. And they're like, can you set it at the Hotel Budapest? And I was like, no, there's not. Look, they said, why don't you guys go out, raise all the money. We'll release it. We love you guys. But you guys raise the money and we'll just put it through our system. And so that's where we ended up. And we then went to the fans and raised almost $5 million.
Do you like that? I mean, as a filmmaker and as a comedian and as somebody who has developed and cultivated your audience, do you like going straight to them for
Well, in a way, because if you look at the amount of movies and TV shows and podcasts, and there's so much noise out there, right? Radio shows, there's so much noise. It's so hard to break through. It's they call this kind of period the long tail. Have you ever heard of that? That show business used to be just a few things, a few movies, a few TV shows, a few channels, and there were huge numbers of people watching those few things. But then as we made hundreds of movies and hundreds of TV shows, hundreds of podcasts, each group is getting a tiny little slice of it, like a long, skinny rat tail, and you cut it up. And so, you know, in order to break through now, it's a lot harder. And so for us, we have activated our audience. They put money into it.
It's amazing.
There's a movie coming. They know a year in advance this movie's coming because I
perks.
Put money into
yeah,
it. They
right,
have T-shirts.
Right.
They're walking around. And we're hoping that it will sort of pre-activate our crowd.
Let me ask you, I mean, and you work, you get so much work, and you do, I mean, shows like Arrested Development, even Community, as we're talking about in the break. I mean, you've worked on so many shows, you direct a lot of shows, so I know Hollywood's important to you. As Broken Lizard, are you guys at all resentful the fact that Hollywood is not buying more Broken Lizard material after the success you had?
Well, look, I mean, you can waste your time being resentful, or you just figure out what's working in Hollywood now. I mean, what's working really well now is Amazon and Netflix and some of those places, and it's forced the more traditional networks to compete with them. And so there's a little bit of a situation now, which is very beneficial. I mean, look, we're going back to make Super Troopers 2 because we want to and because it's the most marketable thing we have. But we really do want to. I mean, it's we've written 25 drafts of this thing, and it's great. So you can resent it and you'll end up not working, you know, or you can keep on hitting it. Okay, this is what the business is. Let's hit it from this direction.
I mean, it was the first thing we talked about in this interview. It was about how, you know, they chose the state and you could have continued down that route, but you decided to go somewhere else and hustle in a different route. And it seems like, you know, you guys are ever evolving and you're doing the same thing again.
The people who have long-term careers are hustlers. They make their own way. And the ones who are like huge in a decade and disappear are, you know, they're waiting for a great script to show up.
So let me ask you, okay, Super Troopers 2, where are we?
We have shot a week. Kevin Heffernan and I have been cutting it together, and it's. I'll say this: I was the biggest worry for me was, would we have the tone right? Would the jokes be right? Would it be worthy? And based on the week of footage we've cut, which is like 20 minutes, it's worthy. It's good. It's funny. It's cool. It looked decent, and I'm happy with it. We didn't have all of our money lined up by the time the winter came in Massachusetts where we shot. And so we have to, now that once all the winter sort of passes through, we'll be shooting the rest in May. And then we'll cut it together 6 months later. It'll be done. And then Fox Searchlight will release it theatrically all over the country.
And there you go.
Yeah.
And is this going to be the model for Broken Lizard? I mean,
I don't
the
know.
Next project,
I mean,
I'm going to assume you got millions of stuff that you got on the
we'd
show.
We'd like to make a film called Potfest, which is a sequel to Beer Fest, and Warner Brothers owns that. So we'll see. You know, if we can convince Warner Brothers to carve off the lowest number of money that they'll make a movie for, we never know. We might be able to jump back in and be back in the studio business again.
Well, all right. Well, Broken Lizard is on stage at the Park West tomorrow. It's a benefit for Halcyon Theater Company. It's called Meow What? A live comedy extravaganza. And you could see Broken Lizard at the Barleycorn on Clark Street in Wrigleyville for a beer pong tournament called Beer Fest Chicago 2016. That's Saturday during the day. Jay Chandrasekhar, I can't thank you enough for coming in, sitting
fun.
Down and talking to us. And congrats. And we can't wait to see Super Troopers 2.
Thank you very much.
It's a download, rolling along here. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, character flaws, sketch and improv. We're only going to do a half hour tonight because Jay stayed longer, which was great. We had planned for him a little bit earlier, but he was flying in today, but he made it. I give him a lot of credit for that. I would have looked at the delays out of O'Hare and have been like, no, not coming in. But Jay came
that's
through.
Kind of, so that's kind of guy you are.
That's the kind of guy I am. Jay, on the other hand, he's a good guy. That was great.
So good.
Are you a Broken Lizard guy?
Heck yeah.
Still cool, right?
And I always, being a fan, and you mentioned this in the interview, is that you see his name pop up
all over
current sitcoms, like New Girl, and you just like, you're randomly watching sitcoms, and like, there's his name popping up.
The one thing I wanted to ask him about was, can he see, I think you'll see Broken Lizard do more in television because of the opportunities that are there, but... You know, I mean, television's a whole other game, and he's I mean, he's done it. I mean, he's Undeclared.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, he was a director on Undeclared. He was a director on Arrested Development. Come on. Come on.
Which reminds me, I'm really irritated. I lent one of my DVD collection of Undeclared to a buddy, and I haven't gotten it back yet. Is that available anywhere? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, you might be out of luck on that one. Ugh. Man. Yeah, it's good. And I had a chance because... You know, I'd met those guys doing comedy in the middle of the 2000s when they were doing, like, when they were coming off of Club Dread.
Mm-hmm.
And we had done an Aspen Festival showcase at the UCB in L.A.
Nice.
And they came out, and I got to know the guys, and then they invited me to come out and hang out at on the set of Beer Fest, which was really cool. Like, so I got to watch them work, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but they are exactly that. I mean, they will go... You know, Jay will get under the camera and he'll check out, you know, a shot, and then he'll go, what do you think, Steve? And Steve will take a look and go, let's do this. And then, or like when it's Jay's turn to be in it, then Kevin goes behind the camera.
Man,
like,
it's really cool. It's just collaborative, very cool.
And Beer Fest, you know, which turned out to be such a another cult hit,
is
really fun because I went there for only probably a week, and all they shot at that time was the gladiator shot of where they're drinking. So it was just nonstop that over and over and over. Like, and you see the sort of tedious nature of shooting film. I mean, it was amazing. They would just have to do the same thing over and over, like, cut, all right, let's do it again.
Yeah.
You're going to drink out of the boot again.
Yeah.
Drink out of the boot again. They would do that for like 4 hours. They'd clear, everyone eat lunch, come back, let's drink out of the boot from the other side. And it was really fun because there were two guys, they had the German team. And the German team was really, they had a couple guys on there. They had two bodybuilders, one guy who was in Gladiator and the other guy who was like Mr. Universe. And so that when they were off the set, they were only in that scene.
Yeah.
And they would be like, you'd talk to these guys and talk to the Mr. Universe. And we were hanging out. And it was in Albuquerque. It was in a hotel that we were staying in. And, you know, some of Albuquerque's finest ladies of the night would came through the front of the area and just kind of walked through going, anybody interested? Like the hotel bar, right? It was just kind of a startling thing. Like, I think we're okay here. And it was really funny because they came over and I was kind of like ribbing the woman going, just being, you know.
Playing around.
Just a dumbass.
Mm-hmm.
And he was real stoic. The German guy was real stoic. He like didn't say a word. Like it was like a tense moment. Like it was a bank robbery. And then they left and he's like, and I'm like, what's up? He's like, and like 2 minutes later, he leans over and he goes, those women, no class. And I was like, man, I picked that up. Yeah, I know. This was kind of what we were doing there. It's like, yeah, that's great. And then he showed me his girlfriend back in Germany. He showed me a picture out of his wallet. The
very
whole
nice. Yes, was nice. Stoic German. You don't see that too often.
No class. I was like, okay. So anyway, great to have Jay in here. Great to have Broken Lizard in Chicago. Go see their stuff coming up. All right, character flaws coming up after the news. Just a character flaw. Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Wednesday night, and that means it's time for another installment of Character Flaws. That's right. Chicago's got such great performers, writers, comedians. It's kind of ridiculous. I mean, really, people, I mean, it used to be, you know, hey, it's deep dish pizza. Chicago's known for deep dish pizza and sticks. Now it's deep dish pizza, and now it's pan pizza, now it's artisanal Neapolitan pizza and improv. improv, sketch comedy. You just heard Jay Chandrasekhar talking about being from Chicago. I didn't even know that. Like, he came here, he did Improv Olympic, and that's what kicked off his career to go back to college and say, hey, we got to do this. So Chicago is a place that exports this kind of stuff. So, you know what? Why not showcase it here on WGN Radio? For me, I feel like, you know, they have an outlet. We have the outlet. They're looking for an outlet. It's great for everybody. All right. So we'll bring you sketch comedy characters and, of course, improv. It's going to be a fun ride. So sit back and enjoy. I'll host and participate, of course. Tonight, Susan Messing, Rachel Mason. These are big names in Chicago. Susan Messing, a big founder and has been a part of the Annoyance Theater for years, but also has been on Second City Main Stage, directs, teaches. She's an improv guru. Susan Messing, Rachel Mason, and also some of the folks from the Kiss Kiss Cabaret up in Uptown, which is celebrating their first year, their one-year anniversary at their space, their new space up in Uptown. So we'll hear from everybody. Let's do it. It's Character Flaws. A half an hour of fun and games and theater of your mind here on The Download on WGN. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. What's Character Flaws? It's Wednesday night. It's hard to put all these comics together, and, you know, I always need help. I always need support, especially in the studio, and that's why it's great to have my interns back. I don't know where they've been for the last 2 weeks. Brittany, come on in.
Which Brittany do you need? I'm Brittany, and she's Brittany.
I'm Brittany.
No, both of you are fine. I love that you always are together. That's fine.
Hi,
I got
Jackson.
Over that.
We missed you.
It's Justin. Where have you been? I need you. I mean, Character Flaws is now its fourth or fifth episode. I haven't seen you guys.
Well, we had a little mishap, Julian, on Valentine's Day. And you can see my hands are wrapped up. I'm a little on medication.
What happened? Brittany, what happened to Brittany?
We went to Gay Joss for fondue.
Okay, fondue, Gay Joss, sure.
And Brittany wanted to hold the pot because it was really pretty.
I really liked it. I like cheese. And so I held it and I screamed really loud and people were kissing and they stopped kissing and they were sad and then mad and I felt bad.
I, too, resisted the powerful fire of the flame, but I knew that it was going to be Valentine's Day and it should be romantic.
Northwestern Hospital has a lot of paneling.
I thought for sure you met a husband there.
Maybe I did. I just don't remember it because I'm on medication.
Jebson, you don't know that those fires burn really hot. Every single piece of skin on Brittany's both hands were burned.
Oh, yeah, gosh, but the good news is I can't be fingerprinted anymore.
I guess that is good news.
I don't know if you know that fondue is so hot.
Yeah, it's hot. It's cheese, hot cheese.
The good news is I didn't have the oil. I didn't stick my hands in the oil. I stuck my hands in the cheese.
Chocolate.
Don't they have a waiter at Gay Joss that comes out and says, don't put your hands in the fire? I mean, that's a simple thing. I think by this point in 2016, it's just logical.
No, he put the pot on the stove, like the hot stove, and the stove was hot, but I didn't think the pot was hot.
Brittany?
Yes, Brittany.
I thought the waiter was impeccably attractive, so I understand why you were distracted.
He was very cute, and he had a mustache.
And I know about your thing with mustaches.
I do enjoy them greatly.
You really got to get over the mustaches. I mean, you're talking about, you know, your hands being burned. Stop being distracted so easily, Brittany. We talked about this.
It's not like he came to the table with a boat.
No,
boats aside. A mustache and a boat.
I know, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, my God.
All right, it's wintertime. Don't go to any boats in the wintertime.
Do not go to any fondue places. It's a fondant.
My hands hurt.
Brittany, I guess you should still do your duties. I mean, get the guests some water.
Well, so. I did drink some pink wine, so I'm feeling better. Thank you for
and
asking.
And I had a mimosa to get ready for my shift, okay, so I am ready to serve Jackson.
Wasn't talking about you guys. I'm serving the guests who are here.
Would someone like a mimosa?
No.
Jeremiah's on the job.
Brittany.
Thank you for this opportunity.
We really appreciate it.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know.
Where did cheese go?
I don't know.
I like the track. Zimmerman even plays along here in Character Flaws. Gets a little music going. Rachel Mason and Susan Messing playing Brittany and Brittany. I have a feeling they'll be back soon. I have a feeling they have a lot to talk about. I've been thinking about maybe giving them an assignment for St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. So maybe we'll have them back and they can put together one of their famed documentaries. More to come here on Character Flaws, here in the Download on 720 WGN. Well, it's time we continue here on Character Flaws on WGN Radio. You know what? I just realized something. Pete, I hate when this happens. Looks like we may have forgotten one commercial in the last break.
Hey there, do you enjoy 90s fashion? Of course you do. Do you remember when swing bands were hit in 97? Yeah, absolutely you do. Come find my store, Zoot Suits and Everything. We got Zoot Suits that you need. We got them in different colors, different pastels, different tiles, different everything you need. Do you like wallet chains? We got those too. Come on down to Zoot Suits Everything. We're in Dick's Sporting Goods in the back corner. Just ask for me, Phil.
I wish there was a store like that. Rob Grabowski is one of the members of the Kiss Kiss Cabaret Ensemble. The Burlesque Theater up in Uptown is celebrating its one-year anniversary, and Rob helped us out with that bit. Also, another guy that we love, Matt Ulrich, is tonight's news between the news.
Thank you for tuning in. I'm Matt Ulrich, and I am not funny. Today I bring you your local national news and overall general information that you should know, but clearly fail to recognize flaws in yourself and others, so that you may navigate to your day-to-day life and not interrupt, disturb, or irritate those of us that are better than you. Here are today's top stories. Local speech and communication councils are acknowledging that the word just, popularly used in emails, text messages, and coffee pot conversations, is the new like. The trend of using like, such as I was like, but then she was like, so we like, I don't know, I like, etc., has now been replaced by idiots all over Chicago and surrounding suburbs with the word just. Those idiots have assured us that they just want you to know they just don't feel it's as bad as like, and just feel this is just a more honest way to just express themselves on just a personal level in a just more meaningful manner. Like, I'm just way into just, said one Chicago native. Rolling three deep on sidewalks, a Chicago-based organization dedicated to not moving out of your way in packs of three or more, will be holding their regular daily scheduled meeting today on sidewalks in all parts of the downtown Wicker Park and Southport corridor and several other busy sidewalks around the area. Rolling three deep encourages you to notice that they and their party members will ignore the allotted space you should be granted on the sidewalk. Please keep in mind that they are in direct competition with the double-wide parents, the stroller organization dedicated to keeping their children in strollers up to the age of 9 and variables of 2 or more children. If the two groups are to pass one another, a rare occurrence, please avert your eyes as the initial light flash from the blast will blind you. The Did I Bust My Butt Shoveling, or DIBS, has kindly asked to remind Chicago area citizens that they shoveled out that parking spot and not you. The lawn chair clearly lets you know that space belongs to the Toyota RAV4. However, DIBS are at an all-time low due to non-seasonal weather from the merciful gods of snow, lake effect snow, and salted roads. Citizens on Escalators United is once again asking the public to stand to the right and walk to the left up the stairs. The increased pamphlets and flyers left at Midway and O'Hare have made no impact, leading them to believe that these are locals offending this rule over and over again. Citizens on Escalators, or CE, has tweeted, "We don't care if you're talking to your friend about how bad Hail Caesar was. You can hold that conversation for another 15 to 30 seconds later." And finally, Moom W, or Move Out of My Way, is hitting the CTA hard during peak traveling hours. They are targeting citizens who won't let people exit the train, as well as citizens who stand near the door while entering the train. One victim shared his encounter as saying, "They really know how to shoot you a dirty look." One of them once said something under their breath. I don't know what he said, but I was still offended. They have no idea the amount of paranoia I have that I may miss my stop. I just, like, want to get off the train. This has been Matt Ulrich for WGN.
Matt Ulrich, Rob Grabowski, Kiss Kiss Cabaret, the one-year anniversary of the Burlesque Theater in Uptown, 4713 North Broadway. Go check them out. They do great stuff, Rob and Matt. Matt doing the inaugural News Between the News, which I think should be a regular segment here on Character Flaws. It was a truncated Character Flaws tonight because we had talked with Jay Chandrasekhar about Broken Lizard deeper into the show. So next Wednesday that we have open, Character Floss will be back with much, much more. We've got a lot of great stuff lined up. I'm very excited to bring you some of the stuff to working with some of the greatest sketch and improv comedians here in Chicago. Here on The Download. Stay with us. That about does it for The Download tonight here in WGN. We are out tomorrow night, but we'll be back on Friday. Tomorrow night, the Blackhawks play the Nashville Predators. Boo! they're my new hated Green Bay Packers. I like this. I like this feel on me. I like the Nashville hate. I love the city. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I do not like that hockey team. And like Representative Quigley said yesterday, it's that stuff about your fans can't come watch. It just rubbed me the wrong way last year in the playoffs. I did not like that. And they've just been chippy. They're chippy. I don't like chippy. There's probably a lot more to it. But I'm not the right guy. Judd's the right guy. Judd Surratt. So why don't we let him explain with the latest installment of Know Your Enemy.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
He is my enemy.
This is Know Your Enemy on 720 WGN. Here's Judd Surratt.
Last year, the Nashville Predators made a massive cultural change under new head coach Peter Laviolette, who was a finalist for NHL Coach of the Year. Nashville finished 22 games over 500 and third in the Western Conference. And if Captain Shea Weber doesn't get hurt in Game 2 of the playoffs, maybe they oust the Blackhawks in the first round. But the Predators' undoing last year in April may have been less about Weber's absence and more about the declining play of All-Star goalie Pekka Rinne.
Myers across to the left, off the wall, Ladd, and Ladd now goes to the Winnipeg bench. Wheeler for the Jets. His shot, he scored! Wheeler puts it in, crossing over to the right circle. So the Jets stick a dagger in the Predators here, 51 seconds into the overtime period, and they take a 5-4 victory.
After sustaining a knee injury last January, Rinne's save percentage dropped from .931 to .913 after he returned. In the playoffs, that number dropped to .909. This year, his save percentage has sunk to a career low around .900. Compounding the issue, the Predators' goal production is down about 10% this year, putting Nashville on the bubble for a playoff spot in the West. To jolt his lineup, general manager David Poile acquired center Ryan Johansson from the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for cornerstone defenseman Seth Jones.
Today, in my belief, we accomplished something that we haven't been able to do in 18 years of our history, and that's to acquire number one center. We've had a lot of good players come through here, and we've had some good centers, but I think we have a chance here to have truly our number one center, something that we've been coveting for a long time. There's no question in our team, bringing in Peter Laviolette last year and a couple of changes on our forwards, that we played a very up-tempo forward game, as he likes to say, and we scored a lot of goals, and our offense was in balance with our defense. This year, it's been a struggle. I think our defense has been good. Unfortunately, I think our offense has been inconsistent. And I think on balance today, with having Ryan Johansson at center ice, still with the defense that we have, our top four still being intact, I think that that is a better balance for our club. It gives us a better chance to win on a nightly basis.
Poile is hoping the 23-year-old Vancouver native, who posted a career-high 71 points last year, can spark Philip Forsberg, Craig Smith, and Colin Wilson, who were all 20-goal scorers last year. Plus, he can help 35-year-old Mike Fisher down the middle, who's still an effective two-way player with considerable mileage, and draw some of the checkers from veteran sniper James Neal and slippery playmaker Mike Ribeiro. The Predators made the Johansson deal from strength. Along with Weber on the blue line, Nashville drafted and developed Ryan Ellison, Matthias Ekholm, and Roman Josi has emerged as an NHL star. Here's his head coach, Peter Laviolette.
He's been terrific. He is he's a top defenseman in the league. He moves the puck. He defends well. He's capable of generating offensively. He can play against other teams' best players. He's as good in the defensive zone as he is in the offensive zone. Just a real talented player. He's had a terrific year for us. Big part of the reason why we we the success that we've had.
Josi and Weber have done their part thus far, each hit the halfway point of the season with double-digit goal totals. But looking ahead to the second half, can the forwards follow suit? Can Pekka rediscover the form and rhythm that made him a three-time Goalie of the Year nominee in the NHL? And if the Predators do make it into the playoffs, can they make it past the second round, something they've never done in franchise history? For Know Your Enemy, I'm Judd Sirotkin.
Keep your enemies close.
Nothing about those terrible yellow jerseys. I thought it was all going to be about that and who owned the team, and it was just going to be a bunch of country music jokes.
Awful.
Okay. So you know all, Judd knows all about the players, what's happening on the ice. But I want to know, I want to go deeper on the hate for the Nashville Predators. But I guess I'll have to wait. we'll be back. We won't be here tomorrow night. The Blackhawks playing the Predators. They're going to beat them. On Friday, we'll be back. I'm very excited about this. Dan Harmon and Dino Stamatopoulos will be with us. Both of them, the producers for Anomalisa, the best foreign film. Was that what is best adapted animation foreign film? Something like that. Anyway, Dan Harmon, of course, the man behind Community. Dino Stamatopoulos behind Moral Oral. Both with Midwest connections. So they'll be in town, and we'll have a great conversation about that movie, the Charlie Kaufman movie, which is, you should go see that. That's crazy. And much, much more. That's coming up on Friday night.